And this is Letters in Politics. I'm Mitch Jezerich. Today we continue our series of conversations on social movements in our world. Joining me are two writers from England, David Harvey and Kia Milburn. They are members of a writing collective known as the Free Association that has just put out a new book reflecting on movements today. It's called Moments of Excess, Movements, Protests, and Everyday Life. David Harvey, Kia Milburn, it's good to have you both here.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for having us.
And I have to say, when I got my hands on your book, and especially when I'm preparing for an interview, I tried to see at least who wrote it. And this one was challenging for a moment because it's written by the Free Association. I couldn't even find anyone's name until I went to the very back of the book. You had a list of who made up the Free Association. But before we talk about what's going on in Europe, what's going on in England, first let me, just so we have a sense of where you all are coming from, what is the Free Association?
Well, it's a group of us. It's Keir and myself, and there are two or three others that we collaborate with. We've been friends and comrades for 20 years now, half a lifetime, and we've been writing together probably for the last 10 or 12 years under the name The Free Association. Really, starting from around 1999, 2000, we became interested in the whole movement, which started maybe with Seattle in 1999. You could actually trace it back to something that happened in London in June of 1999 called the Carnival Against Capital. And we became active in that movement, and we tried to make interventions into that movement, writing pamphlets and leaflets and so on and so forth. And that's really the genesis of the Free Association.
Anarchists?
We, in a sense, we came out of the anarchist movement, a particular part of the anarchist movement. We would certainly not call ourselves anarchists now, and really we would try to avoid any sort of labels.
And Kia, this is a collective process in writing a book. I mean, did one person write one chapter, or...?
No, we've got an elaborate writing process. So we decide on a theme, we all get together, we discuss and we record our discussions, we transcribe our discussions, we all read the transcriptions, try to boil it down, and we do that process a couple of times. Then we organise a discussion meeting with a much wider group of people that we draw on. We put the ideas we're formulating to them. And then eventually somebody takes these notes and makes a first draft, and it goes to somebody else, and it just goes around until we're happy with the final product.
How long did it take?
10 years.
10 years. 10 years, yeah.
I mean, it's interesting, the process, because, you know, you get to the final draft and, you know, I'll say to Keir, oh, I really like that line.
Yeah.
You know, and he says, well, actually...
Yeah, you wrote it.
You know, because you lose track of where an idea came from. Because Right. Somebody has an idea, they're not sure about it. Somebody else says, that's great, writes it up. Somebody else changes it.
Gets refined.
And so it's impossible to identify individual authorship of any single idea.
And there's five of you all together.
It varies, the number varies. We've tried to, that's why we tried to call it the Free Association, as in, you know, we're trying to free it up from like an organized group in a way, so it varies. But really there's really four of us who are like the core group, and then we try to draw people in and out.
It alludes to Marx's description of communism as a free association of producers.
Okay.
So
in this book, Moments of Excess, Movements, Protests, and Everyday Life, you're talking about social movements today. We're trying to have a series of conversations on this show about social movements in our mm-hmm. world. Let's begin by talking about Europe mm-hmm. and what's happening in England.
Well, something is happening.
Yeah.
And
we've noticed something's happening, so that's what we're trying to grasp on.
I mean, it's interesting because... The anti-globalization movement, the movement from maybe the Zapatistas, maybe Seattle, that seems to have come to an end. And one of the things that really killed it off seemed to be the credit crisis, the financial crisis, which really erupted in 2007, 2008. So since 2007, 2008, we were thinking, something's going on. Something's going to happen, but we seem to be in a state of impasse. You know, we could see the foreclosures. We could, you know, we identified the end of what we call the neoliberal deal, and we can talk about that in a bit if you want. But we identified the end of this neoliberal deal, but we weren't quite sure what was going to replace it. We couldn't quite see the struggles. We seemed to be in this state of impasse. And then something did happen. And that something that happened in November of last year, when there was a student march in London, and that kind of sparked this something.
And that's when the students took over the Conservative Party headquarters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Student marches in the UK for a long time have been quite small, things to probably avoid, quite boring in a way, and quite ineffectual. There was a march called on November the 10th in London, because there's a really serious reform of higher education where fees were going to go from £3,000 a year to £9,000. That's a big increase, of course. Lots of other reforms as well, so that brought in some teenagers, 16 to 18 year olds. So this march, the people who organised it, the National Union of Students, they thought there might be, say, 10,000 people, and it turned out to be 50,000 people. So people thought, yeah, there is something going on. Mm. Then there was quite a big breakaway. Several thousand people went to the headquarters of the Conservative Party, part of the ruling coalition, occupied that, the windows got broken. And straight after that, the head of the National Union of Students, he condemned this violence. I don't think it was violence, it was some broken windows, there wasn't any fighting. But he got it completely wrong, because it seemed to like just crystallise this new mood in the country of, well, anger, to be honest. Mm-hmm. Because it's not just the reforms in higher education, it's also a really serious package of austerity measures, probably unlike we've seen in the UK before.
What are some of those proposals of austerity?
Public spending, yeah, is being cut, social service spending on libraries, on schools, daycare centres, childcare, and so on, being cut probably 25%. That's the proposal. I think the whole anger thing, yeah, is interesting, because I mentioned the neoliberal deal that seemed to be operative over the past 30 years, say, and that seemed to be based on one hand cheap credit and the other some sort of hope or aspiration. Wages have stagnated, as we know, over the past 30, 40 years, but you could maintain a standard of living through access to credit, and also the hope that, you know, life would get better in the future, maybe for yourself, certainly for your kids. And of course that ended with the credit crunch in 2007-08. But what happened with the neoliberal deal was, through credit, it enabled antagonism to be displaced. So you can't pay for things now with your wages, so you borrow. But at some point, those debts will come due, and that's when the antagonism will kind of be intensified and will become apparent. And it was with the credit crisis at that moment, the future to whence the future which antagonism had been displaced to, the future arrived now. And we've seen that antagonism on the streets, and we seem to have seen the re-emergence of some form of class politics, which is quite interesting. Mm. I mean, the ruling coalition, particularly, both, you know, such a high proportion of the members of that government went to very expensive public schools. As you know, public schools in the UK mean private schools. Mm. And one of the chants on this march, David Cameron is our Prime Minister, he went to one of the most prestigious, most expensive public schools called Eton, and the chant was David Cameron, and a word I believe we can't use on the radio, David Cameron, off to Eton.
Perhaps we should say a little bit more about the actual student movement, because so there was this demonstration on the November the 10th, and then there was just it sparked a series of weekly demonstrations, real intensity, which had a new mood. It was unlike any movement we've had in the UK for probably a generation, and the mood was a sort of like disobedient militant mood. There was in the UK, there's a real feeling that we're in serious trouble, and there's no way to vote yourself out of this situation. And so the new mood was, the second demonstration that took place got surrounded by the police. It's called Kettling in the UK. It's one of the police tactics. Gets surrounded by the police, and people get detained there for up to sort of 10 to 12 hours. So the third demonstration just meant that all these young kids were just determined not to get cattled, not to get surrounded. So every time that the march set off and a line of police would form, all these kids would just run in the opposite direction, and I mean run. They were running, and so you'd have all this footage of policemen in riot uniforms struggling to keep up, struggling to run behind these students, and they just keep, it's like this idea of, you know, it's not enough, we can't rely on politicians, we can't just march from A to B and ask for something, there has to be something more, and I think people are trying to work out what the more is. And the other thing that happened was that universities became occupied. Large numbers of universities around the country became occupied.
And I think what's interesting about this movement is, for these people, for many of them, it will be their first experience of political activity. And these will be really generative moments for them, what we've described as moments of excess. There'll be moments when everything changes. And until that moment, until their participation in those demonstrations, you know, all they could see was some future unrolling, a future which seems the same as the present. And with their involvement in those demonstrations, you know, what we describe as a moment of excess, the future seems to, everything seems to open up. Things which were inconceivable yesterday suddenly become possible, even likely.
Well, I want to read a quote from your book, and it's from the chapter in the essay, What is the Movement? And you all write, quote, a decade ago, we personally would have been scathing of the involvement of pacifists, Greens, Christians, and anyone from a left-wing party. Now we are much more open to the possibilities of such people communicate with those like ourselves from a more historically radical or antagonistic tradition. We have also noted the increasing politicization of a new generation. What is more, this politicization seems faster than in our day. This due, we think, to the decline of many of the old forms of mediation, grassroots-based social democratic parties like the Labour Party, trade unions, etc. It is as if we are witnessing a fast-track revolutionaries. Today reading No Logo, tomorrow boycotting McDonald's, and the day after that hurling a rock through its windows and fighting with the police. So 10 years ago, as anarchists, you wanted nothing to do with pacifist Green Party activists.
We wrote that. That's 10 years. You wrote that chapter 10 years ago.
So 20 years ago,
yeah. When we were still young. Foolish. No. Yeah, but in a way, we were much more certain about what the world was. Part of what the book is about how movements move through generations in a way, like new generations. So one of the things we think that's happening at the moment is there's a new political generation emerging in the UK. Lots of young kids who have not been interested in politics are suddenly are very interested in politics. And, you know, there's lots of really nice testimony about these young kids who've been going on this demonstration saying, look, I've never felt this alive before. I've never felt a need to be involved in politics.
But is it also time for a larger coalition? I mean, a very large coalition is what we saw in Egypt when you had students, April 6th movement, with the Muslim Brotherhood.
Definitely, it's time for a coalition. I think... One of the things that we'd like to stress, and a theme which runs through the book, is how we understand movements, and really the distinction between a verb and a noun. Understanding a movement as a thing, as a collection of individuals that you can probably define, and understanding movement as a verb, as a moving of social relations. And I think we can use that verb versus noun idea to, and apply that to organization. Are we talking about an organization or the process of organizing? And similarly with generations, are we talking about a generation or are we talking about the process of generating? So yes, I think we need some coalition, but the coalition would not be the leader of the church group sits down with the leader of the political party, with the spokesperson of the anarchist group, and kind of hammers out some set of principles. It would be people on the streets, in their community groups, on, you know, just people acting together, people from different backgrounds, people who may have not had so much in common before, finding new commonalities and acting together. So yes, but we need a new alliance, new coalitions, but those are the sorts of more mobile, more fluid coalitions and alliances that I think we need.
That's the voice of David Harvey. We're also joined by Kia Milburn. They are with a group from England called Free Association, and it has just put out a book called Moments of Excess, Movements, Protest, and Everyday Life. Is what we're seeing right now in Europe, here, what we're seeing in Wisconsin, what we're seeing spread through the Arab world and North Africa. Is this an anti-capitalist movement?
Potentially, I think. I mean, in a way, we're not sure. We're just seeing the first outlines, the contours of what we think the new response to the economic crisis is. And we think that, yeah, so we think what's happening in the UK is quite obviously a response to the economic crisis. We think that's probably true in the Maghreb, in Egypt, etc. Mm-hmm. But we don't quite know. There are some links between students in Tunisia and Egypt and European students. People are trying to formalize and discuss these things and see what we have in common.
Yeah, we've talked to some students in Tunisia who definitely call it a struggle against neoliberalism.
Yeah.
You all write in your book, liberalism is staggering right now, but there's still no opposition strong enough to kill it off.
Yeah, we had this idea that we were in a situation of impasse, and we started to analyze neoliberalism as some sort of like zombie liberalism. You know,
yeah.
So the brain has gone. They cannot adjust. And develop new strategies. So what we've got in the UK is neoliberalism on steroids. It's the reforms of society that have been going on for the last 20 years, but multiplied. That doesn't mean that that's necessarily the best thing from the perspective of capital. So it's this idea that the brain has gone, the ideology has gone, the ability to analyse and change has gone for neoliberal or capitalist strategists. They're just keeping straight ahead. So we called it zombie liberalism,
yeah,
because it just keeps on staggering on.
And you refer to this moment of time, and there have been other moments of time like this when change is possible, but we don't know what that change looks like, as moments of excess.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about that. Tell me about this moment of time in that context.
Well, we think for in different situations, for different people, a moment of excess can occur almost at any time. In historical terms, you know, you might look back to 1917 and the Russian Revolution. You might look to Spain in 1936. You might look to 1999 in Seattle, or New Year's Day 1990 in Chiapas with the Zapatistas. So those are those kind of big events.
Yeah.
But when we've talked about this with other people, they say, well, actually, you know, the event for me was the event we mentioned before in June 1999, J18. So in a large political sense, they're moments when of enormous collectivity, but they kind of happen at different historical moments.
But in a way, what we're talking about is political possibility. Most of the time, our options are extremely limited by society. Every now and then, and so certain things just don't seem possible, and just every now and then, certain events happen, and what seemed impossible yesterday seems quite logical now.
Yeah.
We think we are going through one of these things. So, you know, in retrospect, we might have said, well, look, yes, well, there's been a lot of organizing in Wisconsin, so perhaps we might have expected it, but I don't think anybody could have predicted that would have happened,
yeah,
that those numbers.
And we're almost out of time, and I want to get the details. I know you all have some events coming up here in the Bay Area, but in 30 seconds, tell me about, and that's the thing, we don't know what this is going to look like.
No, we don't. Mm-hmm. And in a sense, this is the exciting thing. And if we did know what it was going to look like, it probably wouldn't have the possibilities.
Okay. Well, you all are in the Bay Area for the next few days. Tell me something. Where are the events going to happen? Where can people see you?
Well, tonight we're talking at Station 40 in the Mission. I believe that starts at 7. And tomorrow night we're staying in the Mission, and we're talking at Counterpulse also at 7:30.
So tonight at Station 40 mm-hmm. in the Mission? And tomorrow, where's that at again?
At Counterpulse.
Also in the mission. All right. Kia Milburn and David Harvey have been my guests. They're with the collective known as the Free Association, which just has put out the new book, Moments of Excess, Movements, Protest, and Everyday Life. I appreciate you both coming in.
Thank you very much.
And that does it for Letters on Politics. The show is produced by Deanna Martinez, Claire Leonard, Laura Privis, and Eileen Alfandary. Special thanks to John Hamilton. Kirsten Thomas is the engineer. I'm Mitch Jesrich. Thanks for listening.